Hi, everybody. My name is Rob Mason. I'm an alcoholic. By the grace of God, the Fellowship of Alcoholics Anonymous and the Program of Recovery I found in this book. I've not found it necessary to take a drink since the 7th July, 1988, and for that I am extremely grateful. It's good to be here. Thank you all for coming out on this beautiful Sunday. Isn't it a great day? Beautiful day, isn't it? I'll tell you, I was relaxing by my house today, took a nap, and I said, you know, there's nothing I'd rather do than get up and talk to a bunch of drunks today, you know? One of the great things about the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. All right, we're going to start today on page 72, and we're going to jump around here for a minute, but let's everybody start there. Actually, we're going to start on 71. I take that back. You'll remember from last week, for those of you who were here. Oh, by the way, for those of you who were here, yes, sir. Thank you very much for reminding me. Let's have a moment of silence and a prayer. Thank you. Lord, help me to set aside everything I think I know about you, everything that I think I know about myself, everything that I think I know about my fellows, and everything I think I know about my own recovery, all for a new experience in you, Lord, new experience in myself, new experience in my fellows, and a much-needed new experience in my own recovery. Amen. Thank you again for reminding me. Sometimes I forget to pray too, you know? But I didn't forget today. I always start my day in prayer. We're going to talk about that next week, as a matter of fact, how to start our day. Last week we talked about the fourth step, and for those of you who were here last week and did not get a copy of the four-step inventory that's in the big book, Vanna back there has got them. Wave your hand, Vanna. Isn't he beautiful? All right, there's Vanna. So if you didn't get one, raise your hand. And Van, I made 20 extra copies, so there should be enough copies to go around here. And if not, I will bring even more next week. That's fine. That's a lot of copies. That's almost 80 copies. That's great. That's wonderful. And remember, if you're getting a copy, my advice to you, my suggestion, my recommendation is don't write on it until you make a master copy for yourself and put it away for the people that you will eventually sponsor. Okay, or hopefully are sponsoring. Okay, so that is good news. And as we discussed last week, the fourth step is the first tangible evidence that we get, the first tangible evidence that this personality change, this spiritual experience, this psychic change that we've been talking about for the last 8 weeks has begun to take place. You got enough? Oh, that's great. Give one of these folks back here. Well, I got some more in the car. I'll give you guys some. See that? Look at that. Just a giving, sharing kind of group. So, on page 70 at the bottom, it says, if we have been thorough about our personal inventory, we have written down a lot. We have listed and analyzed our resentments. We have begun to comprehend their futility and their fatality. We have commenced to see their terrible destructiveness. Here it comes. We have begun to learn tolerance, patience, and goodwill towards all men, even our enemies. Why? Because we look on them as sick people. You'll remember when we went through the resentment portion of the inventory process, it told me that I must have a different perspective, that I have to have a change in my view and my perception and my perspective on the people that wronged me. Remember that? Okay? And as a matter of fact, as I shared last week with the men that I sponsor and the women that I've taken through the steps, I don't let them go on until and unless they are willing to look at their resentments from an entirely new angle. Okay? Because that, for me, is the key to the entire inventory process. Is am I willing to look at my resentments from an entirely different angle? Are we losing battery? How's that? Is that better? All right. We'll see. And so, now that we have listed our resentments, listed our fears, listed the harms that we've done to others, and we've begun to see this first change taking place, we get into a chapter on page 72 by no coincidence called Into Action. Okay? And let's talk about that for a second. It is important to understand something for those of you who are new. How many people here with less than a year? Less than a year of sobriety. A lot of people. That's great. Okay. I was confused about something for a long time. Okay? I thought that I was going to change by coming to meetings of AA and sitting. Okay? And I am here to tell you, and I did that year after year after year after year after year. And I got drunk year after year after year after year. And I always wondered why. And I thought it was that all of you knew some special secret that I didn't know. And you did. The secret that you knew was, in order to stay sober in Alcoholics Anonymous, this is not a spiritual program with an action component. This is an action program. Okay? There's no chapter in our book called Into Thinking. Okay? There's no chapter in our book called Into Spirituality. Okay? Because I know we like to get all spiritual around here, right? We like to sit around meetings and pontificate about how spiritual we are, right? This is a program of action, okay? The book tells me three times that faith without works is dead. I must do something, and the book is going to tell me that very, very clearly. It is important to understand, and it's important for me to remember, that I change not from the thinking steps. I change from the action steps. How do I know that? In the first three steps, we haven't really taken any action. The only action we've taken is acceptance, reflection, and said a prayer so far. That's all we've done. The first tangible action we've taken is in the fourth step, where we've gotten our paper, we've gotten our pencil, and we've began writing down our resentments, our fears, and the people that we've harmed by our conduct. Okay? And right after that process, it begins to tell me that now I've started to change. Right? And now it's going to go on telling me that in order for me to continue this change and to perpetuate this change, I must take more action. One of the guys that I sponsor said something, Tom, many years ago, that has always stuck with me, and it really is true. She says, in Alcoholics Anonymous, we live in action and we die in thinking. And that was always true for me. And I've seen a lot of people who were deep thinkers in Alcoholics Anonymous who knew this book inside and out, who could quote it, right? Who are drunk today, who have died of alcoholism because they did not take the appropriate action, right? And we're going to talk about that this week and still next week. Okay, so now that I've done step four, I'm now going to begin, and I've identified those things in my inventory that are blocking me off from the sunlight of the Spirit. You'll remember, that's our problem. Turn to page 64 for a second. For those of you who maybe haven't been here, what is the purpose of step four? Right here on the top of page 64, it says, though our decision step three was a vital and crucial step, it could have little permanent effect unless it once followed by a strenuous effort to face and be rid of the things in ourselves which had been blocking us. The whole purpose of step four is to identify those things that are blocking me off from the sunlight of the Spirit. Now that I have completed the four-step process, my next job is, how am I now going to remove those things? Okay? It's not going to happen automatically, I hate to tell you. I wish that it did. Okay? It's going to require some action on my part, right? So, they're going to start right here in this chapter called Into Action by telling me six things, that should have happened if I have followed the precise, specific, and clear-cut directions on how to do step four. Now, let's stop right there for a second. If I've done some other type of fourth-step inventory, these things that they're going to tell me have happened may or may not have happened. Okay? A very good reason to follow the outline for doing step four right out of the book Alcoholics Anonymous, wouldn't you think? Okay. It says here, having made our personal inventory, what shall we do about it? We have been trying to get a new attitude. That's the first thing, right? A new attitude, a new relationship with our Creator, and to discover. Okay? To discover. That's all we've done so far. Chuck Chamberlain used to say, uncover, discover, and discard. Okay? All we've done so far in step four is uncover and discover. Okay? We haven't removed those things yet. We haven't discarded those things. That's what 5, 6, 7, 8, and 9 are all about. Okay? To discover the obstacles or the things that block us that are in our path. We have admitted certain defects. That's columns 4 and 5. Okay? That's where we admitted certain defects. We have ascertained in a rough way what the trouble is. That's column 3. What part of self is affected? Was it my security? My sex relations? My ambitions that were hurt or threatened? Right? That's what the trouble is. And I'm telling you right now, I could be the most spiritual guy in the world, but you hurt or threaten my instincts, and all of a sudden I can go postal quick. You know what I'm saying? Still today. You know? You threaten my family or my instincts in some way, I can get very upset and unspiritual. Okay? And anybody that knows me well enough will tell you that, okay? Now, I've gotten a lot better, at not reacting to those things, but that is still true for me today. Okay? It goes on to say, we have put our finger on the weak items in our personal inventory. We have seen where we were not the victim. You'll remember from last week, one of the great things that we discover from doing step four, if we follow the directions in the book, is we discover something that was a shocking revelation to me, that I was not the victim, that I was the perpetrator, right? I was the cause of those resentments. It wasn't the cop that pulled me over for drunk driving. It wasn't his fault, right? It was my fault, right? It wasn't those girls that left me and you know, didn't want me around. It was my fault for my actions. It wasn't my parents or my brothers. It wasn't the court system. It was me. 99% of the time, it was me. All came back to me and what I had done, right? It goes on to say, everybody circle that next word, now. What does now mean? It means right now, right? So that would be a timetable, right? So we've completed our inventory, and when are we going to take the next action? Now, right? Pretty clear, right? Now these are about to be cast out. This requires, there's another important word, I wonder how important that is. This requires action on our part. So it's not going to happen automatically, okay? It's not going to happen. And it's not optional, okay? It requires action on my part. Action is not optional here. And nobody likes to hear that, right? Nobody wants to hear that, right? Especially me. Keep your finger right there and turn to page 14, I want to say. Page 14. Oh, it's on page 15. Here's the problem for most alcoholics. Last line on page 14 on to 15. For if an alcoholic failed to perfect and enlarge his spiritual life through work, that's the word that we have a problem with, isn't it? Very distasteful for a guy like me, right? I don't like that word at all. Turn to page 88 for a second. Page 88. This is even worse. Last paragraph on the page. This is not all. There is action and even more action. Now that doesn't sound very good to me, right? Because I'm a lazy, procrastinating alcoholic, okay? But remember, this chapter is called Into Action. It's going to require me to do something if I want to stay sober, right? When I first came around the rooms, and I hear it still today, they said if you put as much effort into sobriety as you do into drinking, you will probably stay sober. And I think that that really is true. I think that that really is true. But it's not enough for me to just sit in meetings of AA and try to get it through osmosis. The book says that is not going to work for me. It didn't work for me. Okay? If it works for you and half measures is availing you something, then that's great. Okay? Half measures did not avail me anything. Okay? It goes on to say, on page 72, this requires action on our part, which when completed will mean that we have admitted to God, to ourselves, and to another human being the exact nature of our defects. Everybody circle that. We're coming back to it. This brings us to the fifth step of the program of recovery, not a program of recovery, not one program of recovery, not my program of recovery, the program of recovery mentioned in the preceding chapter, right? Now, interestingly enough, and it goes on to say in the next sentence, this is perhaps difficult, especially when discussing our defects with another person. Second time that they've mentioned it. Okay? Second time that. But if you read the steps, now they're over here. If you read the steps and you read step five, it says, admitted to God, to ourselves, and another human being the exact nature of our wrongs. And somebody said to themselves, they read this, and they said, huh, well, why does it say in the step, the summary of step five, we admit the exact nature of our wrongs, but in the narrative in the book on page 72, it says we admit the exact nature of our defects. Okay? And what, Bill, is the difference between a wrong in step five, a defect of character in step six, and a shortcoming in step seven? Okay? And Bill sat back in his chair one day when asked that question by someone, and he said, well, it's funny that you should ask that. See, Bill, a lot of people know a lot of things about Bill. What they don't know is that Bill was actually a very learned man, and one of the things he studied was he studied English language, and he had a speech teacher who once told him, Bill, if you want to sound intelligent, you don't want to look stupid, you'll find the same way to say the same thing in different words to get your point across. It would have sounded very funny if he had said, We admitted to God, ourselves, another human being, the exact nature of our wrongs. We became entirely ready to have him remove our wrongs. And we humbly asked him to remove our wrongs, wouldn't it? Right? So he used a different word in each one of those steps that mean exactly the same thing. There is no difference. Right? Does that make sense to everybody? Okay. So that's what we're talking about in step five. It goes on to say back in the book, this is perhaps difficult, especially when discussing our defects with another person. Let's stop right there for a second. I think it's interesting that they don't say, this is perhaps difficult, especially when discussing what they did with another person, does it? Because that's really not the purpose of step five. Now that we've uncovered in step four the exact nature of our defects, that's what we're going to talk about in step five. We're going to see how our defects, our selfishness, our dishonesty, our self-seeking and inconsiderate habits have caused us to have resentment, fear, and to harm other people around us, right? And thank God they did it the way that they did it, okay? Because if they had said, for example, let's do it in reverse. Let's say they said, Rob, I want you to write down all the ways you've been selfish, dishonest, self-seeking, frightened, and inconsiderate, and now tell me how that has made you have resentment, fear, and harm other people. I never would have been able to do it, right? But when they start out here, what did they do to you, right? I get that, okay? I can understand that part. And then they bring it a little bit closer. Well, now what did they do? Now what part of you is affected? Okay, now what did you do? Okay? Now I can do it, right? But if they had done it in reverse, I never would have been able to do it. I wouldn't have been able to, I didn't have enough self-awareness to do that. Does that make sense to everybody? And I think most people would agree with that, right? Thank God they did it from the outside in rather than from the inside out, or I never would have been able to complete step four. It goes on to say, we think we've been well enough in admitting these things to ourselves. There is doubt about that. In actual practice, we usually find a solitary self-appraisal insufficient. Everybody highlight that or underline it. Very important. Very important concept. I want to read you something out of the 12 Steps and 12 Traditions book, and I'm going to refer to this a couple of times today because there's a couple of things that I think are very pertinent. And I just want to make one quick footnote about the 12 Steps and 12 Traditions book that a lot of people may not know. Now, I know there are some big book thumpers out there that don't believe in the 12 by 12, and, you know, they don't believe in using it, and, you know, that kind of thing. And the reason that they don't, if you study the history of AA a little bit, you know, alcoholics back then are really no different than alcoholics today, okay? I mean, how many people here have attended a group conscience meeting, right? How many people would do it again? Yeah, a few. All right. You know, I mean, alcoholics back then are no different than they are today. Alcoholics love to argue about stuff, right? They love to argue about stuff. The reason Bill wrote the 12 Steps and 12 Traditions book 13 years after he wrote the big book, if you read in the foreword, the preface of the book, he says that he hopes that they've made everything so clear that no further authentication will be necessary. Nothing further would need to be said, okay? But 13 years later, remember, when Bill wrote the big book, he was 4 years sober. He was not a spiritual giant, okay? He had not been sober that long, and he had some more to say, okay? When 13 years later, now he's almost 17 years sober, okay? And at that time, the big push in the fellowship was the 12 Traditions of Alcoholics Anonymous, okay? Because Bill had been studying some things. One of the groups that he studied was a group called the Washingtonians, okay? And for those of you who know a little bit about the history of alcoholism and of AA, the Washingtonians was a group very similar to Alcoholics Anonymous in many ways. They were a group that believed in abstinence. They were a group that believed in personal sponsorship. They were a group, they started in the 1800s, and they got involved in a lot of issues that we learned from. Somebody gave Bill a book on the Washingtonians, and this was a group that had over 500,000 members in the mid-1800s. And they fell apart. They disbanded completely, and the reason that they did was because they got involved in things like slavery, and they got involved in things like prohibition, and they got involved, and it was not unusual. One of the things that they believed in was having speakers come and speak to their group. As a matter of fact, if you look back in the talks of the Washingtonians, there was a group in, I believe it was in Ohio or Pennsylvania, that had a young lawyer named Abraham Lincoln come and give a talk to them, right, about alcoholism, right? And you could read Lincoln's, if you get a history of Lincoln's speeches, you'll find the speech in there, right? And he talked about alcoholism. He really understood alcoholism in a way that few non-alcoholics do. He said something to the effect of, I don't understand why you people drink the way that you drink. It's almost like you get a different effect than I get. And if I got the same effect that you got, maybe I'd drink the way that you did. So it was really, really pretty good understanding for a guy who was a non-alcoholic. But the Washingtonians, as I said, the moral of the story was they fell apart because they did not have a primary purpose. They did not have something to bind them together, and they got involved in all sorts of controversial issues, and these controversial issues eventually caused them to fall apart. It was not unusual to have these politicians, one representing one point of view in one town giving a talk, and another representing another completely opposite point of view in a different town. And so they got to infighting with each other, and they all got drunk eventually, right? And so Bill said, we can't let that happen, and how can we prevent this from happening? Because at the time, in the 1940s, that Bill's reading this book, a lot of those same problems were affecting Alcoholics Anonymous, right? Problems about money, problems about getting involved in outside issues and treatment centers and all sorts of different things, right? And so he decided to craft the 12 traditions, right? And he did it with some help of some group members. And there was a lot of infighting about the 12 traditions. The group didn't want to accept them, right? And for those of you who maybe have sponsors that were around back in those days, and I know some of you here did, okay, there was a lot of disagreement about the 12 traditions, right? And Bill went to the first AA convention and tried to pitch as he was going around the country trying to sell the traditions to the group. And so one of the reasons he wrote the 12 by 12 was he figured if he wrote a book with the steps and the traditions in the same book, right? See, Bill was Cunning, Baffling, and Powerful too. That people might accept it a little bit better, right? And so the story goes that he went to the first international conference and said, we're here to ratify the 12 traditions. Are there any objections? Hearing none, they're approved. Clank. And that was it, right? And so he kind of shoved it down everyone's throat, and that was the end of that. But I believe in using this, and I'll tell you why. I think some of the most profound truths in the AA program are found in the 12 Steps and 12 Traditions book, right? And remember that the 12 Steps and 12 Traditions book, for those of you who are new, is not meant to work the steps out of. As a matter of fact, it says in the preface to the 12 Steps and 12 Traditions book that this is a group of essays, okay, that are not meant to work the steps. It's designed to help broaden our understanding of the steps as printed in the big book, okay? So that's the point. And people love to talk about the 12 by 12, right? But, and here's why. I figured it out finally. It dawned on me. It's because you could pontificate about it and talk about it, and you don't have to do a damn thing because there's no directions in here, right? And we love that, don't we, right? But there is some helpful information in here on step 5, and it talks about in here on page 57, I believe it is. Excuse me, page 59, going along with what it just said in the big book, hence it was most evident that a solitary self-appraisal and admission of our defects based on that alone wouldn't be nearly enough. We'd have to have outside help if we were surely to know and admit the truth about ourselves. The help of God and another human being. And then it gives us some conditions. It says, only by discussing ourselves, holding back nothing. Okay, we're going to come back to that when we get over onto page 57. Page 76, excuse me. Only by discussing ourselves, holding back nothing, only by being willing to take advice and accept direction, could we set foot on the road to straight thinking, solid honesty, and genuine humility, okay? You see, it's interesting to me, and it's never ceased to amaze me that even though I've been sober for a few days in succession, how inaccurate my appraisal of myself can be, right? And anybody here who's been sober for a long time, I reach a point, I can get off the beam pretty easy, you know what I mean? Still today, not as easy as I used to, but there are times when I get a resentment, or when something's going on in my life, or when I think I'm right and I have the right, I have the answers rather than having the questions, that I can get a little bit off center, right? And I can't see the truth all the time, okay? I can't see the truth. And I need someone else to kind of bring me back a little bit to the center. You see, I believe that that's why I need to involve a sponsor. I believe that that's why sponsorship is so important. And that's why self-sponsorship doesn't work for guys like me, right? Because I can convince myself of the most inane, ridiculous crap that you would believe. As a matter of fact, when we get to the 10th step, it's going to tell me having just made a conscious contact with God It's not likely that I'm going to be inspired at all times. I may pay for this presumption with all sorts of absurd actions and ideas, right? And I could give you a laundry list of the absurd actions and ideas that I've had in the last 21 almost years, okay? A sponsor, my experience with sponsorship is that a sponsor will take me in a direction that I am unable to go myself. Think about that for a minute, right? A sponsor takes me in a direction that I am unable to go myself, right? And so I must have someone else to give me objective perception over my subjective reality. And now we're talking about step five. I have, like I said a couple weeks ago, I do an inventory about every year, year and a half, whether I need it or not. Okay? And it has never failed to amaze me. You know, I've been doing this for a while. I've done a number of inventories, and you'd think you'd get pretty good at it, you know, about seeing the truth. But it never fails to amaze me. Just when I think I can see it very clearly, someone else's perspective gives me an entirely different way of looking at it, right? John Wesley, who was the founder of the Methodist Church, said it this way. He said, more light shines through two windows than through one, right? And I believe that that's true. Now, I don't believe that the men that I've had that have sponsored me are infallible, okay? And I'm waiting for the day that a sponsor that I had gives me some bad advice, because I'm going to come in here and rat them out, okay? I will, you know, because I'm a cynic that way, right? But what I do believe is, although they're fallible, I don't believe that the power that works between us when he's trying to help me, I don't believe that power is fallible, okay? And I've never yet had a sponsor give me any advice that ultimately wasn't for my betterment, right? So I must involve another person, and that's very important for me. And if you're new, I highly recommend that you find someone that you can confide in. It goes on to say, we may be more reconciled to discussing ourselves with another person when we see good reasons why we should do so, the best reason first. Here's the best reason. If you're unsure about sharing your inventory, if we skip this vital, which means life-sustaining step, we may not overcome drinking. Well, that's a good reason, isn't it? Right? If you're here and you want to stay permanently sober, okay, their experience was if you skip this vital step, you may not overcome drinking. Okay? It goes on to say, time after time, newcomers, what's a newcomer? First what? First 90 days? Isn't that what we say a newcomer is? Right? Well, back in those days, you were a newcomer until you completed the steps. I'll tell you that. Okay? But we call a newcomer first 30 days, first 90 days, right? So who does fifth steps according to this? Newcomers, right? I think that's a timetable for the steps, isn't it? Right? It doesn't say when you're 3 years sober, you should be doing the fifth step. Right? Time after time, newcomers have tried to keep to themselves certain facts about their lives. Trying to avoid this humbling experience, they have turned to easier methods. And I'm here to tell you, they still do. Right? We still do. We are the kings of easy and queens of easier, softer ways, aren't we? Right? I mean, if there was an easier, softer way, I'm here to tell you, I'm going to take it. Right? If I thought there was a three-step program that would work just as effectively as this, I'm going to do it. Right? But that has not been my experience. It goes on to say, almost invariably, they got drunk. Having persevered with the rest of the program, so they did the rest of the steps. They did the rest of the program, right? They wondered why they fell. We think the reason is they never completed their house cleaning, right? They took inventory all right, but they hung on to some of the worst items in stock. They only thought they had lost their egoism and fear. They only thought they had humbled themselves, but they had not learned enough of humility, fearlessness, and honesty in the sense we find it necessary until they told someone else all of their life story. I'll tell you my experience. Everybody that I've sponsored and everybody that I've taken through the steps, and I've taken a number of people through the steps, I've heard a number of fifth steps, more than some, less than others, but they all have that one thing, right? They all have that one thing. That one thing they're not going to tell anybody, right? I had mine, right? That I wasn't going to tell anybody, right? And if you're here tonight and you haven't done your fifth step, you're thinking of that one thing right now. I know. Because I used to sit in meetings as I was writing my four step, and I used to think about that one thing, right? And I remember I had written my inventory, and I had gotten to go to this park in Concord, California with my then sponsor, Pappy Carl, and we were going to do my fifth step. And that one thing was back there, you know? And I would like to stand up here and tell you that I wanted to be this great spiritual guy, that I wanted to change my life, that I, you know, all this stuff, right? But that's a lie. You know, the truth, you know what the truth was? The truth is, I was just tired of fighting, right? The truth is, I reached a point where I was suffering from alcoholism sober from the guilt and the remorse of the things that I had done, that I was just ready to do something different, right? And so I gave that thing up to one other person, right? That's all I had to do. So if you're sitting here today and you're thinking about that one thing or those two things that you're so ashamed of, you can't imagine telling anyone else, let me tell you my experience. That was the thing that unlocked the door to freedom for me, right? Because that was the one thing that was going to keep me drunk, right? The guilt and the remorse, right? And here's the beauty of it. A couple things happened. All of my life, up until that day, I felt like I was on the outside of life looking in, right? And after I did that fifth step and I shared that with him, all of a sudden I felt like I was on the inside of life for the first time, right? I was the guy that I would sit in a group like this in AA, and I would feel like it was all of you, and then there was me, right? As my old sponsor Bob used to say, right? All of you, and then there was me, right? And when I did that inventory and I gave up that one thing that was going to keep me drunk, I wasn't going to tell anybody, right? All of a sudden, I would come to AA and I was part of the group. I became a member of Alcoholics Anonymous, right? I joined the club, right? That was my experience. And another thing funny happened after I shared that. You know, that one thing that was going to keep me drunk that I was so ashamed of? I have heard a number of inventories, and I am able to share that one thing with the people that I'm going to hear their inventory. And I let them know that no matter what you've done, I've heard worse. And this is, let me tell you the one thing that I did that was going to keep me drunk, right? And usually they go, well, if you've done that, then what I've done is nothing, you know? And I'm okay with that. That's okay, right? That's okay. Because then the more I've shared that with people, the less power it has had over me, right? The less power it has had over me, right? So, let's see here. Where am I going here? Self-sponsorship. Let's talk about self-sponsorship. Another thing I think that is important about this, I've heard people that have said that they want to share their inventory with several different people, and I don't have a problem with that. I don't have a problem with that. As a matter of fact, when we get over into the actual sharing of the inventory, I'll talk a little bit about that. That there are times when I encourage people to do that. Okay, but my experience with dual sponsorship, and I know some people say, well, I have one sponsor for this and one sponsor for that and one sponsor for this, right? We all know people like that, right? Yeah. And here's why that doesn't work for me. Okay, that's almost as bad as self-sponsorship for me, because here's why. I will always find my answer, right? I will go to enough people till I get the answer I want to hear, right? That's my experience, right? If I don't want to do nothing, I'll go ask enough people till I find somebody that says, you shouldn't do nothing. And then that's exactly what I'll do. I will see, because what a lot of people don't want, they don't really want sponsorship, okay? What they really want is validation, right? And see, validation is the one thing I don't need, right? I need somebody to tell me things that go against my better judgment, right? All right, moving on. Middle of page 73. So if I skimp on step 4, okay, which is what they're talking about here in this paragraph, if I haven't completed my house cleaning, if I've hung on to the worst items in stock, can I do an honest and thorough step 5? No. Can I do an honest and thorough 6 and 7? No. Can I do an honest and thorough 8 and 9? No. You see, so it's like this, remember this arch that we're building through which we're going to walk to freedom, right? If I skimp on the cement put into the foundation, if I try to make mortar without sand, the book's going to tell me, then my structure's going to fall apart, right? So I must ensure that each of the stones that I put in place is solid, right? Is solid. All right, middle of page 73, one of my favorite paragraphs in the book. It says, more than most people, the alcoholic leads a double life. He is very much the actor. To the outer world, he presents his stage character. This is the one he likes his fellows to see. He wants to enjoy a certain reputation, but knows in his heart he doesn't deserve it. The inconsistency is made worse by the things he does on his sprees. Coming to his senses, that means sobering up, coming to his senses, he is revolted. At certain episodes, he vaguely remembers. These memories are a nightmare. He trembles to think someone might have observed him. As fast as he can, he pushes these memories far inside himself. He hopes they will never see the light of day. Now listen to this. He is under constant fear and tension, and that makes for more drinking. Now remember, I've come to my senses. And it says, coming to my senses, I'm under constant fear and tension. As I've said before, I don't get sober and get happy, joyous, and free. I get restless, irritable, and discontent, right? I get full of constant fear and tension. Why? Because of the guilt and the remorse and the horror and the nightmare, the book says, of the things that I've done on my sprees, right? You know, I used to think that people got away. You know, I used to think I could get away with stuff, right? I used to think I could get away with stuff. I sponsored a guy right out of prison, right? Right out of prison. Good guy. His name was John, California, about mid-90s. And John was a rough case. He was a rough case. He was a hard case, you know. He was the worst kind of newcomer, right? He's the kind that knew all about AA, right? And you couldn't tell him anything, right? But he was in so much pain, right? And you could see he was so angry about everything, right? And I tried to reach this guy, right? And he would tell me stories about the things that he had done. We'd talk, we'd go to meetings, and we'd talk afterwards. And that was the kind of the best way to reach John, you know? And I remember one night we were talking, and he shared with me some stuff that he had done in prison, you know, that he felt terribly bad about. And he said that since then, he couldn't help but feeling like killing himself, you know. And this was this big, tough, tattooed ex-convict that you would and he started to cry, you know. And I thought of this paragraph right here in the book as he was sharing this with me, and I realized that no one ever gets away with nothing in AA. You know? It all comes home to roost sooner or later, right? And that was really true for me, right? No matter how much I drank, no matter how much I tried to bury those memories, right, that were a nightmare about the things that I'd done, maybe it's those kids that you left at home when you shouldn't have, or the parents that you treated so badly, or that wife or husband that you mistreated all those years, or something else that you've done. Maybe it's some sexual stuff that you're not real proud of, right? And we've all got that kind of stuff, right? That we try to bury that stuff farther, but sooner or later it all comes home to roost because we've got to sober up sooner or later. You know, one of the guys that sponsored me said it kind of painted it like this, that for alcoholics, life is kind of like driving down the road in a station wagon, right? And you're driving down the road in a station wagon, and you know how life is. You come up upon stuff that's not real good, not real positive. Maybe you lost a job, right? And you don't want to deal with it, do you? Right? So what do you do with it? You throw it in the back of the station wagon, right? And then there's those taxes that you didn't pay. And you don't want to deal with that, so you throw it in the back of the station wagon, right? Then there's your kids, you know, you weren't as good of a mother or father as you should have been. You can't even stand the guilt of thinking about that, right? So you throw it in the back, right? And for me, getting sober is like slamming on the brakes at 80 miles an hour, right? And all that stuff from the back ends up in the front seat on top of me, right? And so, this is what they're saying here is that sooner or later, I can't stand that, and so what do? I drink, right? I drink. And I drank to hide those feelings of the things that I had done. And sometimes, you try to explain this to a non-alcoholic, right? I would try to drink to forget what I did while I was drinking. Right? Now you explain that to a non-alcoholic sometime and see what they say. Okay? But I understand that, right? Because the one thing that would make me feel better about the things I did when I was drinking was more drinking, right? And that kept me drunk year after year after year, right? All right, the book goes on to say, psychologists are inclined to agree with us. We have spent thousands of dollars for examinations. We know but a few instances where we have given these doctors a fair break. It says, we have seldom told them the whole truth, nor have we followed their advice. And I wrote right in their sponsorship, right? Here's why, okay? Because my sponsor is going to have very little effect on me if I seldom tell them the whole truth or follow their advice, right? It's not just about me telling my sponsor the truth, it's about doing what they tell me to do. You know, one of the gifts I was given in early sobriety, and if you're new, let me be the first to share it, is sponsors do not give suggestions. They give directions, right? And so everything my sponsors have told me, I have taken as a direction, not as a suggestion, right? Because if it's just a suggestion, then I could take it or leave it, right? And I'm a leave it kind of guy, right? I'm a leaver, right? I'm not a taker. I'll take what I want and leave the rest, and I won't take much, right? That's how I am, right? So I have to take the whole thing. Right? All right. Bottom of page 73. We must be entirely honest with somebody if we expect to live long or happily in this world. So you don't have to do this unless you want to live long or happily. Okay? Yeah. And then it gives us a list of people we may be able to do our inventory with. It says, rightly and naturally, we think well before we choose the person or persons with whom to take this intimate and confidential step. Sorry about that. A little tongue twister there. It could be infinite, right? And then it goes on to say that we could do it with a priest or a minister, and I've done that. I, at one point, was sponsored by my sponsor when I moved here from California, Don. And Don was in California, and I had some inventory work that I needed to share. And, he's 3,000 miles away, but I went and shared it with my pastor, and that's fine, okay? Now, the book lists several people that we could do this with, okay? But I'll tell you why your sponsor is the best bet. And it talks about this in the 12x12. We're not going to turn there, okay? Because I'll tell you what, I try to share my inventory with my sponsor every year because my experience has been that my sponsor will say, well, wait a minute, Rob, this sounds like the same thing we were talking about 4 years ago, right? A different form, a different situation, right? A different job, a different town, a different girl, or a different situation, but it's really the same thing, right? It's really fear, right? It's really, again, another one of those 100 forms of fear, self-delusion, self-seeking, and self-pity that you've struggled with, right? And that has been very, very true for me, okay? But they give us a list of people we can hear this with for a reason, okay? Because remember, in 1939, when the book was published, the book was the 12-step call, okay? It didn't come with another person to say, hi there, here's your book, and I'll be hearing your inventory, okay? So they had to give us a list of people that we could do our inventory with, because what if you got to this point in the book and you're in Minnesota and there's nobody there, there's not even another member of AA, right? So they had to give us a list of different people that we could do this with, okay? All right. Now, it does talk about we think well before choosing the person or persons with whom to share this intimate and confidential step. I've heard a number of inventories that I shared. One of the things that I've done over the years is I've heard some inventories of some women. Okay, and I've sponsored some women, and that's perfectly okay with me. I know some people have an issue with that, and I understand the reasons why, but my book doesn't say anything about that, okay? My book doesn't. I believe that the Spirit is the Spirit, okay? However, one of the things that I always encourage the women that I have taken through the steps to do is to take their sex inventory to another woman, okay? And here's why. Because I don't want somebody that I am working with and taking through the steps who's a woman to not share their entire inventory with me because they're afraid of what I might think, right? And so I've always encouraged them to do that, and most of them have done that, okay? And I'm okay with that. That's perfectly okay with me. Because the most important thing here, the principle here, is that I must be entirely honest with somebody. I must be entirely honest with somebody. I know some people who've taken portions of their inventory to their priest or their minister to share that. And you know what? That's perfectly okay with me, right? That's perfectly okay with me. All right. It goes on to say in the bottom of that next paragraph, about middle of the page, about five lines up, we have no right to save our own skin at another person's expense. Such parts of our story we tell to someone who will understand, yet be unaffected. The rule is, here's the rule for the fifth step, we must be hard on ourselves, but always considerate of others. Right? The rule is, I'm hard on myself, but always consider. There's some other rules in our book, which we'll get to a little later on, okay? So, I've used this in other areas of my life, by the way, okay? The rule is, in Alcoholics Anonymous, is I must be hard on myself, but always considerate of others, right? So, whenever I'm in a situation in my life, I ask myself, am I being hard on me, or am I being hard on them? Am I being a producer of confusion, as the third step says? Or am I being the producer of harmony in this situation, right? Goes on to say, notwithstanding the great necessity for discussing ourselves, it may be that one is so situated that no suitable person is available. If that is so, this step may be postponed only, here's the condition, only if we hold ourselves in complete readiness to go through with it at the very first opportunity, okay? So how many people here knew who was going to hear their inventory before they completed it? I knew I did. Okay? Most people did, okay? So if that's the case, then as soon as we're done, okay, we're ready, and it's going to reiterate that in the next paragraph. It says, we say this because we are very anxious to talk to the right person. It is important that he be able to keep a confidence that he fully understand and approve of what we are driving at, that he will not try to change our plan. Well, why is that important, right? Because we have a 75% or better rate of recovery. So why change the plan, right? Why change the plan? We must not use this as a mere excuse to postpone. Here it comes, timetable for the fifth step. When we decide who is to hear our story, we waste no time, right? It says we have a written inventory, which we completed, right? Last week we talked about it. And we are prepared for a long, not a short, talk. We explain to our partner what we are about to do and why we have to do it. Why do we have to do it? The best reason first. If we skip this vital step, we may not overcome drinking. That's why we have to do it, right? We have to get down to the causes and the conditions of our drinking from page 64, right? That's why we have to do it. And if you're working with somebody in Alcoholics Anonymous, the beauty of it is you don't have to explain to them why. They know why, right? They know why. It goes on to say, he should realize that we are engaged upon a life and death errand. Everybody underline that, okay? I was talking to somebody before the meeting, and they said that they were sorry that they were crying last week. And the reason they were sorry they were crying last week is because every time they got done with their inventory, their sponsor blew them off, and they got drunk, okay? The Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous tells me that the fifth step of this program is a life and death errand. See, I believe, and I'll tell you why I believe it after we come back from our break, that the fifth step is the step in our program that puts the disease of alcoholism into remission. Okay? It puts it into remission. And I'll show you why I believe that when we get to it. Okay? But step five is a life and death errand. That means sponsor. Okay? If you're sponsoring people, remember that sponsorship is an obligation and a responsibility. Okay? And I take it very seriously. That means if somebody calls me up and they have an inventory to hear, guess what? I break plans and have. Right? I will drop what I'm doing. Right? If somebody calls me up and says they have an inventory, I will leave early from work, take the day off work, whatever it takes to go do that. And I have done that. I had a Christmas party to go to several years ago, and a guy called me up. He said, I have a written inventory, and I think I'm going to get drunk if I don't share it with somebody. I looked at my wife. I said, honey, I can't go. You know, you're going to have to go by yourself. And I went and heard that guy's inventory. Right? It's that important. Right? Why? Because if you remember when you were new, okay, and I remember when I was, and I had all that guilt and remorse, I couldn't handle it another minute. I had to get rid of that stuff, right? Because I wasn't going to be able to stay sober, right? And the book tells me it is a life and death errand, and I treat it as such. I treat it as such, right? It goes on to say, most people approached in this way will be honored by our confidence. And then it gives us some direction. It says, we pocket our pride and go at it. Illuminating, shining light on every twist of character, every dark cranny of the past. Now it gives us what I call the fifth step promises, right? We always talk about the ninth step promises. Here's the fifth step promises. These are the promises that should have happened if you have successfully and thoroughly completed step five. It says, once we have taken this step, withholding nothing. What kind of word is that? That's a conditional word, isn't it? Withholding nothing. That's the condition. So ask yourself this question. Did I withhold anything? Right? Did I withhold anything? Right? And that's one of the things that I ask the men and women after I've heard their inventory, is there anything else that you need to tell me? Right? Is there any, and I ask, there's a few other questions I ask. You know, I ask them, have you, is there anything else you need to tell me? Is there anything you've forgotten? Is there anything that you've left out that you're going to wish that you had told me? Right? Is there any sexual stuff that you did that you're not real proud of that you haven't shared with me yet? Okay? And if you think of something between now and when you get home, call me. Right? But I ask them, have you withheld anything, right? And usually they'll say, oh, no, absolutely not, right? No, absolutely not, right? It goes on to say, once we've taken this step withholding nothing, we are delighted. And I'll usually ask them the question, well, how do you feel? They say, I feel pretty good. And I say, well, would you say you feel delighted? And they'll say, well, yeah, I guess I'd say that. And I say, well, then I know they got the first promise, right? It says, we can look the world in the eye, okay? We can be alone at perfect peace and ease. So I've begun to make peace with myself. Our fears begin to fall from us. We begin to feel the nearness of our Creator. We may have had certain spiritual beliefs, but now we begin to have a spiritual experience. The feeling that the drink problem has disappeared will often come strongly. Everybody underline that. What a powerful promise. And that was my experience, right? I'll tell you, a lot of things happened to me that day in Concord, California when I shared my inventory. One of them that I didn't realize, though, at the time, was that the obsession to drink for me was removed that day, okay? And in my case, it has never returned, right? And I know that as long as I continue to do this, it never has to return, right? All I need to do is follow the same prescription that's outlined in the book, right? It says, we feel that we are on the broad highway, walking hand in hand with the spiritual, with the spirit of the universe. Now, so I'm no longer restless, irritable, and discontent, am I, according to these promises, right? Once I've taken this step with holding nothing, I'm in perfect peace and ease. My fears fall from me. I begin to feel the nearness of my Creator. See, all of a sudden, I've gone from the bridge to the shore, as Bill says in the 12 by 12, right? And how do you know if you've withheld anything? That's a question I get a lot. How do I know if I've withheld anything? Ask yourself this. How do you feel? Do you feel delighted? Right? Do you feel like there's something that's still in there that you need to share with another human being? And as I said, when I send them home, I tell them if they think of anything to call me, and then I sit by the phone and I wait. Right? And I'll tell you something. More often than not, that phone has rung. Right? You know, there may have been one small detail that I may have left out. And that's okay. You know, that's okay. Right? Let's take a 5-minute break.